Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Philadelphia-based jazz pianist, composer, and educator, Micah Graves. We talked to him at length about his 2022 CD, Not for the Ordinary Pawns. This album was fueled by a six-month stint in Amsterdam as an exchange student, and after he returned home, he was passionate about composing music. This 24-year-old musician has had some quality training, and the world is looking bright for him. Enjoy the story.
Thank you for taking a minute out for Neon Jazz. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. Sir, it's a pleasure to talk with you.
Pleasure's all mine, man. You know, the one thing about this album is that it just immediately has a punch to it. I really have enjoyed it. It's a powerful record, so I'm happy to talk to you about it. And I guess we should start there with the album and COVID and the possibility of live music and just having music out during this time. What does this release mean to you?
That's a great question. I think one thing that this release means to me, I think you stated before, you know, we had a year, maybe a year and a half hiatus where we couldn't really play live music. So for me, I wanted to kind of capture the aesthetic of playing live to keep that same energy like I was playing at Chris's or playing at South or playing at a venue where the musicians are completely free. It has that same energy if you were sitting there right in front of the person as they were playing. So playing this and releasing this album was, it was definitely freeing for me, freeing for my spirit, and playing it live once we released it was an even more like a beautiful experience. And I think one thing that this album did was, you know, the musicians that were part of this, we were all going through the same thing, no gigs. So this really brought us together, brought us to being musicians again, practicing together. So this album, it freed us and then also gave us the live aesthetic of playing for audience and keeping that same energy.
And I guess to piggyback off of that, you know, we all had time for self-reflection. What did you learn about yourself that maybe you didn't realize before the pandemic that's going to make you stronger as we do reemerge back into the world in live music?
Yeah, also a really great question. I think a few things I learned about myself is given space and time, I could be quite productive. Before that, I felt myself like I was running around a lot, playing, and I didn't have much time to really just sit and write and finish an idea. So in a strange way, COVID was it was good for me those first few months because those ideas that I didn't never finish, I was able to really just sit down to spend time all day writing and finishing this music. So I realized I'm more so a contemplator and thinker. I don't need very much entertainment to keep me going. I just need a piano in front of me to kind of draw my inspiration from. So it just kind of drew me to love music a little more during this time.
So let's go back. Actually, before we depart right now and go back to the beginnings, your roots, what do you hope the listener gets from this album? I know the way it affected me, but what are you hoping the listener gets from this experience?
I wrote it in a time of my life when I was in Amsterdam and I was looking for hope. It was a period where I was trying to find myself, find my spirit, find my renewal. So I wrote it, and it's supposed to be uplifting. It's supposed to make you want to run, make you want to jump, make you feel inspired. One of the title tracks is called Spirit, which is kind of the mantra of this album, just having your spirit relive through this music, through your life. So I want audiences to feel energy. I want them to feel euphoria. It is an instrumental album, but I want this to somewhat hit on a spiritual side as well, that, you know, whatever you're going through or however life may be hitting you, like, your spirit will never be diminished because this music, we always have music to get us through.
So are you originally from Philadelphia?
Yes, I've been here, man, 24 years now.
Okay, cool. So talk to me a little bit about your roots and, you know, kind of your childhood and how jazz and music became your life.
So I grew up in Philadelphia, and I started playing piano around the age of 13. I took classical lessons from my neighbors for about the first 3 years of my life, and I never really got into jazz. I was homeschooled, and I had a lot of time for myself. And it was around the age of 16, my dad took me to see my first jazz concert, and it was Jeff Wilbur Fusion down in New Jersey with Eric Marienthal, Jimmy Haslip, Will Kennedy, and Jeff playing piano. And I just remember seeing that and not understanding anything that was going on, but just knowing how it made me feel. I didn't understand anything musically about it. It just made me feel good, and people were screaming, and he was standing up and he was soloing. That energy and that euphoria that I saw was, I didn't have that at the time. So when I got back, I bought all his records. I bought his same keyboard. I got his transcription book, and I got practice in. So I really just modeled my my playing after him at a young age. Even when my chops are, I didn't know the technicality of what he was doing. I just wanted to keep that energy that I saw that night. And kind of to piggyback off of that, being in Philly, as you know, there's a lot of great musicians here. Musicians such as Orrin Evans, Emmanuel Wilkins, Yusei Farah Ali, Sumi Tanuka, the list goes on. McCoy Tyner's from here, John Coltrane. So I remember going to sessions. One thing that Philly is honest. So if you play a song, you mess it up or you don't know the head, someone's got to call you out on it. I remember I was playing a session and I was just comping way too much, and Orrin Evans came up to me and said, "Hey, man, you got to leave some space." So Philly's, it's always been an honest, but a really, once you get to know, it's a beautiful space. I got, grew up at the Clef Club. I went there around the age of 15 with some of my peers, like Joe Block and Emmanuel, and some incredible musicians a part of that. So I was there for 4 years, and with that, it was it really catered to the musicians. You know, they threw you in scenarios where the only way you could grow was just by playing. They would call you for gigs, and you wouldn't know the music until you got there. And that's how the setting was. And shortly after the Clef Club, I joined the Kimmel Center under the tutelage of Anthony Tidd, and that was really my first introduction to more advanced music. Anthony, Mr. Tidd, would throw stuff at us at in 15-8, 9-8, 7-8, and really forced us to really think and get to the analytical side of playing music. So being in that, being in both scenarios where having to play in spontaneous events where you just had to create, and also having to think very deeply about this music, is two things that I still carry with me today.
So you had mentioned Amsterdam and, you know, a 6 month stint that kind of fueled the idea of this album. Talk to me a little bit about that time there and, you know, what the jazz scene's like and how you kind of grew with, during that time.
Yeah. So I went there my junior year during the fall, and I was supposed to do, it's funny, Temple gave us this whole thing about how you're supposed to do some study about the place and do some research on it, and I just did none of it during the summer. I was playing, and I remember the day before I left, I had 4 gigs, and then I caught a plane, and then I landed in Amsterdam, and the first day I got there, I was like, oh my goodness, what is this place? It was so renewing. And I tried walking to the school from my area, Palmstraat, and I remember being lost, and I didn't look at a map. I just kept on walking for 2 hours, and that's where I wrote the title of one of the songs, Lost in Time in Central Square. But one thing that Europe and Amsterdam offered me was a sense of space. One thing I recognized there was the writers and the amount of people that wrote in different styles. The Kimmel Center, it was odd meters, but I never really saw it put in practice with other musicians. So the first few sessions I went there, I saw a lot of original music, a lot of stuff that was stretching the boundaries of what you could do. My roommate, Horeem, was a writer as well, so we would sit together and write. And unlike, you know, at Temple, I took a lot of Dennett courses, which took a lot of my time. When I was there, it was strictly all composition and arrangement. So mostly every day I would write a song, bring it in, play it, discuss it, take it back, and it was really just workshopping ideas. So what that did for me was able to allow me to write, workshop, and keep on writing. So by the time I left there, I had 20 to 25 tunes I could take back from with that. It really taught me the different styles to write, writing in suite forms, writing in a style of Wayne Shorter, writing for a trio, writing for a vocalist, which I really never did before, writing lyrics, writing my story. Amsterdam really allowed me to express myself and express my musicality that I haven't really seen before.
You know, you're off and running. You got an album out. You know, hopefully the world wakes up here. What do you like the best about the process of being a professional musician? What's the most pleasing thing to you?
Honestly, I think I love rehearsing. I get goosebumps. Huh. It's a weird feeling. I'm doing a trio gig coming up, and we've got to go rehearse on Wednesday. But just that whole process of getting musicians together, showing them what you want to work on, really practicing it and stretching yourself, seeing other people stretch, and just getting something perfect before you get to the gig. It's that preparation that I think can really take the music really forward, what I think about this. But I think rehearsing and just getting to know the people with it, I think there's this notion that some gigs you just see somebody and you just play and then that's the gig. But I think what makes the music special or makes the album special is if people have personal relationships with everybody. They can relate to how they play. They can really understand them. And that's one thing I think I really grew from this last year was being able to know each musician, writing for each musician, writing bass parts for the bass player, knowing what his style is. Rehearsing does that and allows you to really know the deeper minds of people.
In the world of jazz right now, you know, hopefully when things open up and there's more live jazz, is there anybody that you really want to see live in the world of modern jazz that you haven't seen yet?
That's a great question. There's another Micah in New York, Micah Thomas. He plays with Emmanuel, and I just absolutely love his style. He reminds me of McCoy Tyner, and he writes some very unique compositions. I think I haven't got to see him since 2018, but I think once stuff really opens up, I would love to go see his quartet and watch him play with Emmanuel and also his own trio, because that's very inspiring.
So why do you love jazz?
That's also a really great question. Jazz, as you know, I think it's just very ingrained in the Black American experience. You could look back to slavery. You know, you had the shout houses, you had the blues. Then you had the 1920s with the Great Migration. This music has always been, at its core, a force for liberation, freedom, expression. So when I play this music, you know, there's the technical side of it, but when I play it, I feel free. I feel like I'm, you know, honoring my ancestors by kind of capturing that same essence they heard when they started playing it. And I do love the mathematical side of it as well, how it always stretches me where I might think I know something and then the next day I need to get better at another area, or the always constant inspiration you might have seeing a concert. I love Philly too, because when you go see people play, it's not a competition, but it's more to see, wow, that guy does that really well, and I want to get better at that. So jazz really, it pushes me, and it also gives me freedom, if I put that in a summary.
Beautiful, man. So everyone has a perception of you, your family, your friends, your fans, but ultimately you live your life, you have a perception of you. Who do you think you are?
Man, that's a really great question. At home, I'm just a homebody. I was homeschooled for 10 years. I'm someone that just loves music, loves rehearsing, loves practicing, loves nature, loves being out in the elements, and someone that's got to really just always push myself. I'm never really settling. Even when a project's done, I'm usually working on two when I'm putting something out. I'm going to record next February, but probably got to put three more albums out this year, maybe four. So I think I'm someone that's kind of pushing myself, not so much where it's in the forefront where you can see all this, I'm doing this, but it's more so in the back where I can just work and no one will see it. And I'm totally okay with that because it's a place for me to grow and be introverted and really just be about this craft where it could be a month I could have 13 new songs ready to record and no one would know about it. So I'm a person that's introverted and loves my space.
Micah, hey, thank you for opening up with Neon Jazz. Good luck with the album, and hopefully as the world opens up here in 2022.
Thank you, Joe, so much.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in Philadelphia, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Micah for his time, energy, and cool. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com, and for everything Neon Jazz all the time, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends. We'll be right back.
Neon Jazz.